in Patila, Pool goes home with Munja. Her name's Munja, right?
Yeah, right?
Manju. It's not Munja.
Munja.
Munja. That's a very different movie.
Yep. It's a very different character. Everyone, and welcome to Two White Girls Talk Bollywood. I'm Kim.
And I'm Katie. And we're here to talk about singing and dancing and Bollywood ladies.
Bollywood ladies who get just swapped around in an understandable but very inconvenient way.
Yeah, very understandable, very inconvenient.
Yep.
And entertaining, but also heartbreaking and also very, like, poignant about the station of women in India.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Lapita ladies, everyone.
Yeah. I feel like this, you know, already is answering my question, but I'd already seen this movie. Katie, what did you think watching this movie for the first time?
I really liked it. And yeah. I'm actually really excited that it is, right? It's the India's entry for the Oscars, right?
Yes. Yes.
That makes me really excited and happy because it's like a sweet love story, but also a story about like female independence.
Yes.
And also kind of an interesting commentary on cops.
Yeah.
And like what's right versus what's wrong and like ethics. And I loved it a lot.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I loved it too. I think it struck such a good balance where, you know, it's, I feel like a love story is so quintessential to so much of South Asian cinema. Like, I feel like they made such a good choice of like, all right, we can have there be actual love growing between one of the couples, and then we can have there be like this tension in the other couple. And we can, through both of these stories, really just promote women's independence and growth and struggle,
right?
But in two very different ways.
Yeah. I like the way that you put that because I hadn't put it in those words myself. But yeah, it does show growth regardless of whether you are with a partner or not with a partner or in a marriage or not, which is just really nice to see that it's like, being married doesn't have to mean you lose yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. And even adhering to certain gender norms doesn't have to mean that you are not powerful and intelligent and capable of, you know, living your own life how you want to live it. You know, it's all, everything should be a choice for everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, just a beautiful movie. And I'm really, I'm glad we watched it. And I'm also really excited that it's the pick for the Oscars. And I'm just, I'm hopeful that they'll at least get nominated. It would be awesome to just see India represented on that international stage, even though it's technically a Hollywood award ceremony, but to be recognized with what is internationally considered a very prestigious award.
And I would just be happy personally for this film to be recognized in our neck of the woods.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
it's one that I feel like a lot of people would enjoy. Like, I was just thinking about all the people I know who would really love to see a story like this unfold, even if they lack some of the familiarity that we have with South Asian cinema. It's very accessible to an international audience while still being very representative of at least certain aspects of particularly like rural northern Indian culture.
Yeah. And I feel like, again, like Lapita Ladies, it does so much.
Yeah.
In a really like entertaining, absorbing package.
Yes, absolutely.
That's only 2 hours.
Yes.
Also kind of better for Western audiences.
Yes, who are used to shorter movies. Yeah, for sure. Absolutely, yeah. I agree with that. And I do feel like the, at least the like white American perception of Bollywood, if people have heard of Bollywood, they think of it as being like flashy and, you know, big dance numbers and crazy plot lines and things. And sure, we've seen that. We've
and
talked
we love
about that.
That.
We love that. But it's nice to see like, no, absolutely, they're making these quieter stories because that is what is relatable to a lot more of the people who live in this country, too.
Agreed.
Gosh, we've already said so much, but let's
let's go to our cast.
Down to business.
Yes. Lapita Ladies was directed by Kiran Rao, and it stars Nitanshi Goel as Pool, Pratibha Ranta as Jaya, and then Sparsh Srivastava as Deepak.
Fun to see a lot of young, very talented actors in this movie, too.
Yeah, I found them very absorbing as well. Like, I'm really excited to see what else they do. I also just loved all the women.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all of the female roles in this film were so, so good. And it was very clear that they are at the forefront and the men take a backseat.
Yes.
Which was really nice.
Yeah. I know. I feel like in a different person's hands with, like, a bigger Bollywood budget, it would be the story of Deepak who, like, lost his wife as opposed to the story of the two women who were swapped and need to figure out what to do. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Kind of reminds me of whatever, I forget, like the Satya Prem Kikata, you know?
That was exactly what I was thinking of. Yeah, it's like, that's really a story about a woman, but they told it from a man's perspective.
Right. Yeah. Whereas this is like a story about women from women's perspectives. Although, you know, some stuff was caused by the fact that women are expected to follow their husbands. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, and they give us just enough of kind of Deepak and his just situation, just way of thinking about things that we like him and we know that he's not a bad person and we can root for him as a good partner for Pool.
Exactly.
And of course, a lot of this comes from the fact that there's, as always, there are multiple different writers credited for this movie, but one of them, at least, Sneha Desai, is a woman. So that helps.
Love to see it.
Yeah.
One other note is that I got so annoyed with my phone because as I was typing out my notes, it would autocorrect Deepak to Deepika. And I was like, not this time.
I do type that name fairly frequently, but now.
And it did it like 7 to 10 times. It was awful. Yeah.
That's always so annoying. It's like, you think you know better than me, but you don't. And stop trying to pretend like you do.
And I wish it would just kind of smarten up. You know, once you type in Deepak twice and then it switches it and then I switch it back, maybe figure out that I'm saying what I want to say.
Right, yeah. Every time you, like, go in and intentionally change and autocorrect back to what you initially typed, it should learn.
Yes. Yeah, come on, AI.
Yeah. But dear Apple.
Yeah. Help me write my South Asian names correctly in my phone.
Yes.
So you're really messing things up. But anywho, are we ready for the plot recap?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. We open on a wedding as a veil is being draped over the bride's face. Mm-hmm. And this bride is Pool and the groom is Deepak. The couple says goodbye to Pool's family and then they set off on their journey to Deepak's family. And while on this journey, Pool gives Deepak her jewelry for safekeeping because he doesn't want her to lose it or for it to get stolen.
Yes.
So they get on a train and they sit in a section with two other newlywed couples.
Mm-hmm.
Both brides are wearing like the same exact wedding garb as Pool.
I do like that we're seeing less extravagance in terms of this wedding garb because we so often in Bollywood are like we're hanging out with rich families, but seeing like this is the, you know, the less expensive option that all of these women's families have chosen for this veil, like and it still looks lovely, but it's, you know, maybe a little more affordable. And also, like, later when we see her henna and how like simple it is, like, I don't know, there's just something about seeing that that's very like just feels so normal.
I agree with that. And it's kind of like in Western cultures, fundamentally, wedding dresses look pretty similar person to person up until you hit a certain financial threshold where you get some pretty bonkers things.
And then things start to be kind of ugly, in my opinion. But
So you're right. It does feel very normal.
Yeah.
So, yes, they're in a compartment with like two other newlywed couples. And while on the train, Deepak also sees a newspaper heading that says, "Businessmen soldiers become victims of the bandit bride."
Ooh.
Which, I mean, this movie did its job. I was definitely like, that was in the back of my mind the entire time.
Absolutely.
Not to say that it was a red herring, but It was kind of a red herring.
I'm trying to make a connection between red herring and red wedding garb, but it's not fully formed, but something's there.
Something, yeah. Listener, take the wheel. We can't always be the ones cracking the witticisms.
Jokes. We can't always drive the jokes home. Sometimes you have to take it the rest of the way.
We'll give you the components. You do the cooking. Okay. So Deepak then gets up to use the bathroom. And while he's in the bathroom, they make a stop at a station. And so people in their compartment, like, get up and new people sit down. People get shifted around. And so Pool ends up next to the window rather than on the end of the bench where she previously was. Mm-hmm. So he comes back and the train journey continues until they arrive at their station late at night when everyone on the train is pretty much asleep. So Deepak is in a rush because he's like, oh my God, this is our station. So he wakes up the bride closest to him, who he thinks is Pool,
yeah.
And they leave the train. And this woman was also just startled awake and ushered off the train.
Like, come on, let's go.
yeah, it's like, okay. This new bride immediately realizes the mistake and hesitates on the platform, but the train is leaving and Deepak is telling her to hurry onto the bus. So she does.
Yeah.
The couple gets off the bus and they walk to his house where his mother performs the blessing and she asks Pool to lift her veil. And when this woman does, it's revealed that she is not, in fact, Pool.
Nope.
This is a completely different woman.
Yes, it is.
I also love this because I didn't know how the synopsis was going to play out. Like, I didn't know if it was going to be intentional or what. And yeah. So I just... Yeah, I thought that this misunderstanding was kind of funny.
It is, and then sad. It's very well crafted. Like, it all makes sense. And also just, like, the panic
of,
like, that moment. I feel it very much.
Mm-hmm. Well, that and then there's, like, so many small villages located across India. And it's, like, locating where people are.
And also this is 2001. I feel is very important because it's like
that is important.
It's not as easy, and it isn't even as easy as it is for us, like in
right
in somewhat large cities in the U.S. to navigate things as like in rural India even today.
I forgot that it took place in 2001. Thank you. That is really helpful.
Yeah,
because it makes the fact that, spoiler alert, this woman has a cell phone even bigger.
It's very remarkable. Yes.
I guess cell phones looked like that in 2001. Yeah.
That looked like the phone my dad had in, like, the early days. Yeah.
Yeah, before they got, like, slimmer. Because they were no longer the big brick phones.
Right. It was, like, yeah, like, the 90s were the, like, you open up the thing and you talk.
Yeah.
But then, like, the 2000s, they got, like, the early chunky. 2000s, yeah, were the little, like, beep. Which I kind of wish phones still were. And, like, they just had, like, the one little antenna.
Yeah. And then the little, like, the snake game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good times.
Yeah. But anyway, yes. Yeah, so everyone's very shocked that this woman is not Pool and that Deepak has lost his bride. And they start berating him because, like, how could you do that? He's not a piece, like, of luggage.
He's just, like, breaking down. Like, poor Deepak. He just immediately is like, oh, my God, what have I done?
Yeah, well, and at this point, you don't really know if it was an arranged marriage because at the beginning of the movie, it kind of seemed like Pool was very, like, nervous and a little bit sad to be leaving her family, which makes sense in any context. But, like, you know, you don't know the full picture. And then as you get that and you realize, like, this was, like, a love match.
I don't think it was.
You don't? Okay, but he loves her. Okay.
I think they just love each other. Like, I think
that's
that they,
sweet.
I think it was still, like, they were just meeting, and I think that's part of why it was so easy for this mix-up to happen.
Right, okay, got it. Okay. But then this bride speaks up, and she explains that she couldn't see anything beyond Deepak's shoes, which she did not recognize as a stranger's, because she was like, new husband, new shoes.
Well, and also, like, all of the other grooms in that compartment did also look, they were all dressed fairly similarly, like, sort of tan suits.
Yeah, that would have been really difficult.
Yeah.
And this woman says that for the same reason, Pool likely doesn't even realize that her husband left her on the train.
Yeah.
because she's looking down. All she can see are the groom's shoes. You know, she probably assumes it's him. And this new bride then introduces herself as Pushpa. And she gives Deepak's family the name and location of her husband and her own family's village, and they make a plan to call her family and let them know what's happened. Important to note that she tells them that her husband's name is Pankaj.
Yes.
Meanwhile, Pool is asleep on the train as it arrives in Patila. The other groom, who's still on the train, shakes her awake and she gets off the train, but she's immediately very confused.
Mm-hmm.
Pool looks around the train station, doesn't see Deepak. She starts looking through the train windows for him as this groom, who had like walked ahead of his bride, immediately just left her behind, starts calling out Jaya repeatedly. And so then he sees Pool standing in her wedding garb and he approaches her, only to get close and then apologize for mistaking her for someone else because he recognizes that that is not Jaya. Now, interesting that, yeah, he's looking for a Jaya, but the woman who went home with Deepak said her name was Pushpa.
Yeah.
So,
I wonder what that could mean.
Yes. We also learned that this guy's name is Pradeep.
Yes.
Not Pankaj.
No.
Pradeep then offers to help Pool, but she runs away from him. And it's funny because at this moment I was like, I don't know, maybe he'll end up being nice. You don't know.
Yeah.
Her instincts were good on this one.
Yeah. This is where the real panic for me, I said it before, but like this is what's actually scary. Like the first one, it's sort of like, ooh, oops, oh gosh. And this is like, oh my God, like she's alone. Is she going to be okay? Like,
yeah,
it makes me think of like being a kid and like getting separated from your parents unexpectedly, but like worse because you're a lot more aware of all of the dangers that could happen to you.
Yeah, no, I agree. And also to have been woken up from a sleep to this situation. It's like to go from the high of like getting married and then you sleep.
Traveling
and then
traveling home with your new husband.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah. You're just like, oh my God, I'm alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have any money.
Yeah, nothing.
Or anything.
Yeah.
So yeah, Pool runs away from Pradeep. Smart choice.
Yeah.
And she is kind of left standing alone on the platform, completely terrified. And Pradeep and his family are sitting at like the other end of the station waiting for Jaya to magically reappear. Pradeep's mother tells him to make sure he finds Jaya because she's wearing all of her wedding jewelry.
That's the only reason.
Yep. Yeah, they're really only concerned about the money that she can bring them. Ugh. And the family then leaves Pradeep at the station to wait for Jaya. As that's happening, we switch back over to like Deepak, who goes back to his train station to shout for Pool, but she's obviously not there.
Mm-hmm.
And then Pradeep and his friends are unable to find Jaya, so Pradeep says that if she still hasn't shown up by tomorrow, he'll call the police and her family. But he's already gotten his new motorbike as part of the dowry, so who really cares?
Yeah, it's fine that this woman would just be lost somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's off to see his girlfriend, Dolly.
Great.
Yeah. Poor Pool overhears all of this from where she's hiding behind something at the train station. So also not great that like the one person who extended help to you is scum.
Right.
And then back at Deepak's, Pushpa wakes up and quietly leaves the house. And she takes out the cell phone that her husband's family had given her and she burns the SIM card in the fire.
Yes, she does.
And then smiles. So many questions at
Pushpa's
this point.
Plotting something, yeah.
Yeah, she is. Oh, man. It is funny. I'd obviously written my notes with one understanding of where the plot was going. And then as I was editing them, I was like, I'm going to leave this in.
Because, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. The next day in Patila, Pool wakes up after spending the night locked in the bathroom, which is just so sad.
So sad.
She cries a bit and then like washes her face. And goes back out onto the platform where she meets two really nice guys who offer to help her. And they end up taking her to the train office where she can speak with an official.
Mm-hmm.
And this official asks her some questions, but she doesn't know the station closest to her home, nor does she know where her in-laws live. She does think that she got off the train in Patila with her groom, but then he disappeared. So they're like, okay, it must be a village somewhere near here.
Yeah.
It's not, but she doesn't know that. And I also find it so interesting, like, the number of times it comes up that it's like, well, why don't you know your your husband's family's village.
Right.
And it's like, they literally just follow. They wouldn't be told that information.
Right. That's what I think is so compelling about this movie, is it's just like pointing out, like, isn't it so ridiculous that this woman doesn't know, not because not because it's her fault, but because isn't it so ridiculous that nobody clued her in any meaningful way? Like, nobody believed that she would need this information.
Yeah.
It's not important for her to know. She's just going to follow her husband.
Yeah.
It's just like kind of holding up a mirror to society in a way that I really enjoy.
Yeah, because it's not heavy-handed.
No,
it's
just like
part of the plot. A very realistic, understandable part of the plot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really like it. I mean, I don't like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I like it's that it's well featured.
Done, yeah.
Yes. And another part of that is that this official asks her for the name of her husband, and she refuses to say it because a respectable woman does not utter the name of her husband.
Yeah.
But so this train official tells Poole to go to the police station, but she refuses because of an adage that Deepak had told her, that stolen jewelry leads to twice the misery. First the stolen jewelry, then the police inquiry.
Yeah.
So she's like, no, Deepak would not want the police involved.
Can't trust the cops.
Right. So she's like, so no police. At Deepak's house, Pushpa gives Deepak's mother her wedding clothes and jewelry for safekeeping, and she sees, very pointedly sees, where Deepak's mother keeps their valuables. Then she goes outside and encounters Deepak, who says that they'll go to the police today to sort things out. Meanwhile, Deepak is like, no, I'm going to the police.
Yeah.
No problem.
Well, and also it's like, because like, he's a man, you know, it's like he gets to make that choice of like, well, you know, we need to do it now. So like, it's okay. We'll just do it. But like, yeah, Poole's a woman, so she can't make that choice.
Right.
Yeah.
A woman alone. Yeah. Yeah. After being literally like raised to follow.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And Pushpa refuses to go with Deepak to the police because she says she's scared of them. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
At the police station, Deepak and his family explain that Deepak literally lost his wife, and they end up having to give the policeman 5,000 rupees, but then Deepak is able to tell his whole story, and Deepak gives them the only photo he has of Poole, which shows her in her veil.
Yeah.
Which I found funny. It is funny.
It is a little funny, yeah. And I think it's intentionally kind of played for a laugh. Like,
Yes, because the cop is like, oh, she's so beautiful. any distinguishing features? Because you cannot see her face.
No. He's so earnest, too, when he hands it over. He's like, here. Oh, poor guy.
Yeah. The cops then tell Deepak to come back tomorrow and bring Pushpa with him because she had jewelry worth a fair amount and the cops want a payout. Although, of course, Deepak doesn't know that part of it. He just knows that they want him to bring Pushpa in.
I just need to say the head cop guy is always like chewing
something,
like doing like chewing tobacco or whatever it is that he's got. And I like literally couldn't look at him.
Oh, it's gross.
I was like, I had to like avert my eyes from.
Do you have misophonia?
I don't, but it was more like the way like. Like, I don't mind the sound of people chewing. It was just the way he was saying words around something that was in his mouth for so long. Like, I feel like even if it had been him, like, taking handfuls of things, it wouldn't have bothered me if he's just, like, eating throughout the scene. But it's, like, the fact that it's just, like, a thing in his mouth that he's talking around. So gross.
Yeah. They're like, that's probably lost all its flavor by now. You should just spit it out.
I don't know how that kind of thing works, but it's probably gross.
No, I noticed it, but it didn't bother me, I think, because I was so busy keep writing notes.
Yeah.
But I do like that character choice because it is it's an unlikable trait.
Right. Yes.
Because
you're immediately put off.
Yeah, like similar to the like breadcrumbs of this bandit bride, they also make you really kind of hate this cop because he's like kind of gross and he's like constantly getting bribes and he's looking for more bribes and he's greedy and
making mothers sing to get their sons out of prison.
Although he actually does enjoy that. Like, that was like, huh, do I find this likable? But it's corrupt.
Interesting. Yeah, he's all over the map.
Complicated character.
Deepak returns home only to find that Pushpa has run away.
Mm-hmm.
But then in Patila, Pool is befriending the locals who say that they would help her if she could just remember the name of her in-law's village.
Yeah.
But all she knows is that it's the name of a flower.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cute throughout. They're just like, ooh, what about this name? But nope, that's not it. Pool also doesn't want to go home to her own family because she'd develop a bad reputation for returning home without her husband.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah, awful. Like, she literally feels like she can't go home.
Right. Where if she did feel like she could go home and that would be a safe choice, they could probably very easily get her back to Deepak. But
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the samosa saleswoman that Pool is talking to says that women have been conned in this country for a long time to follow the rules of a, quote, respectable girl.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, this samosa saleswoman's name is Manju. And Manju's got a lot of wisdom to impart.
She does, yes.
And she's convinced that Deepak has purposely left Pool. Because that's been her experience with men, are just men are scum.
And it kind of understandable why she would come to that conclusion, because he did take Pool's jewelry, and we know that it was because he was being, like, sincerely trying to protect her and the jewelry, but it does look a little suspicious now.
Yeah. But to Pool's credit, she never, like, loses that confidence in him.
She doesn't waver. She believes, she hopes, she believes in love.
Yeah. Elsewhere in Patila, we catch up with Pradeep, who goes to the police station and reports that his wife is missing. And in this interaction, he casually mentions that he was accused of burning his first wife.
Mm-hmm.
That is terrifying.
Just throws that out there.
Yeah.
In a police station.
Yeah.
And they don't care.
No. So, noted, Pradeep's not a good guy. And, like, I thought he was a bit scummy before, but now it's like he might be, like, a dangerous kind of scummy.
Like an actual killer. Yeah.
Yeah. So, scary.
Also, just the way that, like, this cop and the cop in Deepak's village, like, react with, like, humor when these men say that their wife has gone missing.
Yeah.
It's like,
how do I get rid of mine?
That's dangerous. Like, that could be, like, you should probably take this seriously, please.
Yeah. Yeah. Pushpa then returns to Deepak's home after 5 hours away, saying that she was at the temple praying. She was not. Deepak's father went there and was like, I didn't see you, but interesting. And she then goes inside and puts a new SIM card in the safe.
Yeah.
Deepak tells his parents that he keeps trying to call Pushpa's family, but he gets a wrong number every time. It keeps sending him to, like, a tailor who's not related to Pushpa. Weird. Don't know why that's happening. But they also don't really follow up with Pushpa about it. They kind of just are like, huh, so strange.
It's like they assume that she doesn't know her phone number or something.
Yeah.
They're like, well, whatever.
Yeah. He then tells Pushpa that she'll have to come with him to the police station tomorrow. And then he and his family decide to wait a few more days before calling Pool's family in the hopes that they'll find her soon.
Yeah.
Because as he's trying to get Pushpa back to where she belongs, he's also still trying to find Pool.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on.
There is a lot going on.
Life right now.
Yeah.
And we get to see a flashback to Deepak and Pool's courtship.
Uh-huh.
And it's really sweet. It's like tentative beginnings of love. And then we see him tell her that he loves her.
Yeah.
It's so cute.
In English. And she's very impressed.
It's super cute. The cops at Deepak's police station receive a fax saying that a Jaya Pradeep Singh is missing.
Mm-hmm.
And the main cop gets on the phone with the Patila cop, and they get to talking, realizing that two brides went missing from the same train. The Patila cop asks if it's the work of the Chandpur bride gang, and Deepak's cop says maybe, but Pool doesn't have any jewelry on and therefore has nothing to steal. Deepak's cop then learns that Jaya went missing with 150 grams of jewelry, and the greedy cop now pledges to keep an eye on Pushpa.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the end of another day in Patila, and Pool's new friends show her the shed where they sleep so that she doesn't have to sleep in the bathroom again.
Mm-hmm.
And they lay out a bed for her, and they all go to sleep, and, like, It's just sweet and not creepy. And no. That's so nice.
They're two very nice guys.
Yeah.
I want to just make the observation about, because the one guy pretends to be an amputee.
Yeah.
And just when I think about what his knees must feel like at the end of every day, it like makes me cringe.
As someone with knee problems, I did wince when he like stood up. I was just like, oh, I couldn't walk
anymore. That would feel so horrible.
Ugh. I know, my knees are just like twinging thinking
about it. I know, literally, like I can feel them.
Yeah. That night, Pushpa sneaks out of Deepak's house again, and she puts the new SIM card in the cell phone, and she smiles as she turns it on.
She's been very sneaky.
Very sneaky. I'm like, why are you being sneaky if you're not sketchy?
I don't know. It's a great question.
And then the next morning in Patila, Pool starts helping at the samosa stall. She's becoming a part of things.
Yeah.
And she's becoming close friends with Manju.
Yes. She's doing things. She's taking action.
Yes. Back with Deepak's family, we see that Pushpa has a tattoo on her wrist that says Jaya.
I love the idea that she has her name tattooed on her wrist.
It's interesting.
Something very charming about that. Just like, I like me.
This is my name. Pushpa does end up going with Deepak to the police station. And when the cop asks her questions, she tells him once again that her name is Pushpa. And she spins a story about how her village's name constantly changes as the local government changes. And that she was on multiple trains before she boarded the one that brought her here.
She does a good job of deflecting all of their questions.
Yeah, and she's actually able to hide behind the assumption that women don't really know anything.
I made a note about that I think it's so interesting to see, like, Pool is a woman who is, like, a victim of how oppressed she is.
Yes.
And Pushpa / Jaya is a woman who is manipulating people's assumptions about her being that way to get what she wants. And it's such a well-crafted movie in that way to see these two, like, compared to each other.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah, so similar to Pool, who couldn't remember the name of her husband's village, Jaya actually, and I'll just call her Jaya now.
Yeah.
This is Jaya. Jaya also claims to not remember the name of her husband's village.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, And when the cop asks why her husband, Pankaj, hasn't reported her missing, she says she doesn't know why. The cop then looks at the facts about the missing person and sees that this person has a tattoo on her wrist that says Jaya. He asks Pushpa / Jaya if she has any tattoos, and she shows him her wrist, which says Shreya. She claims that her grandfather used to call her Shreya as a child, which, sure, you can't really argue that.
Yeah.
The cops try to get a photo of her, but she refuses to take off her veil for the photo because it will dishonor her, similarly using the system in her favor. But then as she is about to leave, the cop says, Jaya, and she automatically turns, as I think most of us would.
Yeah.
Like, even when I'm in a public place and I know that no one would know me there and someone yells my name to someone else, I turn. Like,
yes. Yeah, that's the problem with having common names. And my name, there are a lot of words that sound like Kim.
Yep.
So I'll just, like, turn around from someone being like, him?
Yes. I've had that happen too, weirdly. Like, more things rhyme with Katie than you'd think.
Yeah.
Or sound like it, you know? Right. But so Jaya tries to play this off as returning for the bangles she'd left on his desk, but the cop knows.
Yeah.
He's actually a pretty, like, with it cop.
He is, yeah. And I feel okay saying that as we see what he does.
Yes. In Patila, Pool goes home with the samosa saleswoman, Manju, who lives alone because she tossed out her husband and son. She says they lived off what she provided, then would get drunk and beat her because, quote, men who love you have the right to hit you. Which, terrible.
Men but, who think they have the right to hit you don't love you.
Exactly. Yeah. The two women have a really nice evening together, and Pool cooks something sweet for the samosa stall. And the next morning, Pool and her friends continue to brainstorm possible names of her husband's village.
Yeah.
In Deepak's village, the cops are following Jaya around, And they see her use the cell phone and the internet cafe, as well as send multiple money orders to someone. Mm-hmm. They come to the conclusion that she is preparing to flee. While this is happening, Deepak is going around asking people if they've seen Pool. And he shows the one photo he has to a guy who comments that Pool's face isn't showing, and he says that covering the face is like taking someone's identity away. Mm. Immediately after this, he is served tea by a woman with her face covered.
Yes.
Presumably his wife, which I was just like, thanks. Like, I just, that's just a nod. Yeah.
Again, it's like, just turn around and look at what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. But Deepak has a friend who is close with a politician, and Deepak's other friends tell him to use that connection to put pressure on the cops to find Pool. That friend, Gunjan, meets up with Jaya in the field by Deepak's house, and they have a really nice, romantic, kind of flirty moment. Mm-hmm. But then Deepak's father tells Gunjan that they'll have to spray pesticide to save the crop from being eaten by insects. And Jaya tells them to use sticky traps instead. She then reveals that her father was a farmer who had to sell his land off bit by bit, so she took it upon herself to learn science that would help farmers.
Yeah.
Interesting. Meanwhile, Deepak goes to talk to the politician, who's having, like, a speech at an event. And the politician agrees to help him, but he ends up claiming that the opposition party has abducted Deepak's wife.
Yeah.
And Deepak's kind of like, whoa, that's a lot, but, like, all right, could you at least just say her name? And the politician gets Pool's name wrong.
Yeah.
So that's not even helpful.
Like, super wrong. It's yeah. It's a completely different name.
Yeah, I think he calls her Jyoti.
Yeah, it's like, did he even know her name, or he just made one up?
Yeah, yeah. So, great. Jaya comes home from her errands to find Deepak's nephew playing with her cell phone. Whoops. Mm-hmm. She convinces him not to tell the rest of the family that she has it by allowing him to play the snake game on it. And I think possibly promising him lemon drops.
Mm, sure.
Yeah.
Dumbledore likes them, so does this kid.
You know, that's enough to convince me that they're the best treat ever.
You do like lemon.
I love lemon. It's good stuff. Jaya then helps the family put up the sticky traps in their field, and the cops have continued following her, and they see her smiling and talking to Gunjan. And so because they see this, they're convinced that she's guilty of something. Because she's already moving on to, quote, her next target.
Which, if that were true, that would be so stupid for Gunjan to be her next target.
Yeah. Yeah. But whatever.
Whatever.
They don't have any evidence, though, because they can't even prove that she's Jaya and not Pushpa.
Yeah.
In Patila, Pool asks Manju why girls don't get opportunities the same as men. Manju says that it's probably from fear. Women can farm, cook, and raise children. They don't really need men.
Yeah.
And if all women realized this, men would be screwed.
Yeah.
She then asks Pool if she finally understands the meaning of fraud.
Mm.
Pool just smiles and says that when she reunites with Deepak, she plans to work so that she can help him.
Yeah.
Which is sweet, because you could tell, like, Pool's definitely viewing it as a partnership.
Yes, exactly.
Manju is a little bit like, ugh, you're not getting what I'm saying. Because Manju, again, I think she believes all men are trash for a good reason. Like, that has been her experience. But
not all men are trash.
No, they are not. Can confirm.
Although I do definitely agree with the sentiment that, like, the patriarchy exists to oppress women because women don't actually need men.
Yes.
To help them in all the ways that men think that women need them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Both things can be true.
Exactly. Yes.
At Deepak's house, Jaya has a conversation with the women about cooking what they like to eat, not just what the men in their lives prefer.
Yeah.
And Deepak's mother and grandmother talk about how women rarely become friends with each other because they're so busy with their roles and responsibilities. Mm-hmm. And so they agree to just try to be friends.
I love that moment.
Me too. It's, you know, it's a fairly short scene, but it's so powerful and it's so nice. Yeah.
Just the conversations between women in this movie are so wonderful.
Right. It's not that hard.
It's not.
It's not that hard to include conversations like this.
No.
In your movies.
Definitely not. Especially when you hire women as writers.
Yeah. Yeah. Meanwhile, Deepak and his friends get drunk because he's sad about Pool missing.
Yeah. Sad.
It's been like 4 days at this point.
Yeah.
And Jaya is sneaking out of the house with a packed bag just as Deepak gets back. And she sees he's kind of falling down drunk, so she helps him inside to his bed. And then he just mutters, Pool, before he falls asleep. No. Oh. This poor sweet man. He just wants his wife.
I know. And it's so scary, too. Like, he has no idea where she is or what could be happening to her. Like, yeah.
Yeah. So Jaya is conflicted, and she takes a look at her packed bag and then heads back inside the house. The next day in Patila, Pool's friend encourages her again to go to the police, but she says that she's been missing for so many days, sleeping at the station, that Deepak probably won't want her back. Ugh. Yeah, like the fact that that's a very real concern because your, like, reputation is ruined.
Yeah.
Manju tells Pool that he's the one who lost her, so she can be the one to refuse him if he cares about that.
Yeah.
And she then gives Pool some money for helping her in the stall. And you can tell this is, like, the first money Pool has earned for herself. And it feels good.
It does.
At Deepak's village, we see the cops get a drawing of Jaya from the Pratila station. And it looks exactly like Pushpa.
Yep.
The cop goes to Deepak's house to confront her, and he reveals her real name to everyone and claims that she's a professional thief who stole her wedding jewelry and went on the run. Jaya denies this and asks Deepak to hear her out, but he's very upset that she's been lying to him, and so he doesn't really respond, and the cops drag her away. But they say that they will continue looking for Pool. Deepak's nephew then brings Deepak something Jaya forgot, which was a book on organic farming.
Interesting.
Interesting indeed. And Gunjan shows up and reveals that Jaya had been looking for Pool. With the help of her artist friend, she created a poster and sent it out to nearly every nearby station. And it does make its way to Pool.
Yeah. I just wanted to, like, just underline the, because that was another relationship that I love in this movie, is the relationship between Jaya and the sister-in-law. Like, and we always have to cut stuff for time, but, like, just her whole really story precious. Is, like, so sweet, and their friendship is so, like, wonderful. Like, I love it.
Yeah. Yeah.
The way it's Jaya, like, empowers all of the women in the household.
Yes. Yeah, because this woman's an artist, and Jaya's like, well, why don't you do more art?
Your art can save people.
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a pretty cool use of it. And this poster does make its way to Pool in Patila. So now Pool knows the name of Deepak's village, and she says goodbye to her new friends in Patila and gets on the train to head to Deepak's train station. At the police station in Deepak's village, they bring Jaya out to talk to everyone. And we get a flashback of Jaya telling her mother she doesn't want to marry. She wants to study organic farming instead. Her mother says that she's getting married and that's final. And then it'll be up to Jaya's husband to decide if she can study. Mm-hmm. If he says no, that's just her bad luck.
Ugh.
Ugh, horrible.
It's not bad luck. It's bad person.
Yeah. Yeah. In the present, Jaya explains that Pradeep's first wife died in a fire because she couldn't have children. And no one knows if that was an accident or murder.
Oh, God.
Which is not the kind of household you want to be heading into.
For sure not.
But even so, she'd made peace with her fate, and she didn't intend to run away. But when Deepak pulled her off the train, she saw it as a new opportunity.
Yeah.
She sold one of her wedding bangles and sent the money to her sister. That was what the money transfer was. So that she could pay for Jaya's schooling and lodging. And Jaya was going to leave for Delhi to start studying in 3 days. She then explains that she'd been looking for Pool, and everyone realizes that the cell phone received 12 missed calls, because that's the number she put on the poster. The cop calls that number back and confirms that Pool had been at the Patila station. Yay, they're narrowing it down.
Yes.
The cop then reveals that Pradeep is on his way to collect Jaya, because that case of a missing wife must be closed. Everyone pleads for him to let Jaya go, but the cop refuses. And as Deepak leaves to find Pool, Pradeep arrives at the police station. Pradeep hands over a stack of money to the cop to make the whole thing go away. And they then bring Jaya out, and Pradeep slaps her, just straight up in front of, like, three cops.
Yeah, and her lip is, like, bleeding.
Yep. and he then threatens to skin her when they get home.
Oh, God.
The cop hands over Jaya's wedding jewelry over Jaya's protest that her mother sold off their land to pay for it, so it should belong to her. Mm-hmm. Pradeep says that the dowry belongs to the groom, so he pockets the jewelry.
Which we remember historically is not the way dowry worked, but
correct.
Is the way it's been corrupted.
Mm-hmm. And as Pradeep is dragging Jaya out of the station, the cop tells him to stop. And this is what I was like, thank God. Okay.
I know.
Because I don't know how you can watch all this happen and then just send that woman with that man.
Yep. Just like, okay.
Yep. He tells Pradeep that he solved the case of the missing wife, so that's closed. However, now there's a new case because Jaya is an adult and therefore has rights, contrary to what Pradeep clearly thinks. Mm-hmm. She cannot be forced to go with Pradeep against her will. The cop says that if Jaya files a case of physical abuse and a demand for dowry against Pradeep, he'll need to be arrested right here, right now. Mm-hmm. So either he gets arrested now, or he leaves without Jaya, her freedom in exchange for his. So Pradeep lets her go, decides to leave, but he's like, okay, well, I get to keep the bribe, right? And the cop was like, oh, my God, that was a bribe? Oh, I'll have to charge you for trying to bribe a police officer. Uh-huh. Which is also brilliant.
Yeah.
He also does get the wedding jewelry back from Pradeep because you can't demand a dowry from women. Mm-hmm. And Jaya thanks the cop and tries to give him her jewelry, but he actually returns it to her, telling her to study hard.
Yeah.
So I like that it's like, yeah, he's a little bit corrupt, but, like, he knows what's fundamentally right and wrong.
He knows a criminal when he sees one. He's not going to let, just because this guy's a man, get away with crimes against a woman. Like,
well, that's and it's just, like, how brazen that man is to, like, slap and threaten his wife in front of
to commit cops. Multiple crimes in the police station.
Because he's just that sure that he's in the right and can do whatever he wants with his property.
Yep.
A.K.A. this his human wife. Woman.
Yeah.
Yeah. While this is happening, happily, so sweetly, so happily, Deepak and his friends are riding their bikes furiously to the train station. They're trying to catch the next train to Patila, but they don't need to because Pool is here. Mm-hmm. And she's calling for Deepak, and they're reunited, and they hug, and it's just really sweet.
So sweet.
Yeah. And they get back to Deepak's home, and everyone is so excited that she's there, and they all hug. And the Patila train station friends are notified that Pool made it. Mm-hmm. And they all celebrate.
Yay.
It's cute. Oh, this made me really happy.
I know. So sweet.
And then the final scene of the film is Deepak's family saying goodbye to Jaya as she's about to board her train. And they tell her to come back soon because this is also her home now.
Yeah. Aww. They're all rooting for her.
Yeah. We're all rooting for you. But in like a good way.
But unlike that one woman from America's Next Top Model, she's not going to let us down.
Right. And then Jaya is off to Delhi for school.
Yeah.
And that's the end of the movie.
And they all live happily ever after.
Yeah, except for Deep, because screw that guy.
Yeah, we didn't need him to live happily ever after. He gets to live with the consequences of his actions.
And he got a new motorbike.
Yeah, that's all he really cared about.
Yeah.
Two things I want to say about the reunion between Pool and Deepak. One, that everyone in Deepak's village just assumed that he would have to go get her, but she makes it to him.
Yeah.
Is just great. Like, it's such a small, simple thing, but she goes from having to follow to, like, you know, going out on her own.
Which is an important journey for her. Yeah.
Yeah. And also the fact that she shouts his name. She not only says his name, but shouts it to get his attention.
Oh, like, I hadn't really put that together. But yeah.
And there were definitely little things like that that I missed the first time that I watched it, and little moments that I was like, oh, like every moment is so carefully crafted to like show these women, you know, growing and like working hard to be themselves. It's just beautiful.
Mm-hmm. It is beautiful. I really loved this movie.
I'm so glad. I loved it too. I'm really glad we watched it.
Me too. Yeah. And I hope it does make it to the Oscars.
Yeah. That's actually a good transition into... Oh. So I researched a few different things, but I wanted to actually start off first with... I think it's worth mentioning that there is some controversy around this movie being India's pick for the Oscars this year. And not to say that we disagree with that choice, but I do think it's worth just kind of talking about this.
Yeah.
Indisputably, this is an excellent film. Like, I challenge anybody to watch it and not absolutely love it.
Right.
But many are wondering why the nominating committee didn't select the movie All We Imagine as Light.
Okay.
Which you might remember we talked about several months ago because it was the first Indian film to compete at the Cannes Film Festival in 30 years.
Yeah.
It won the Grand Prix, which is the second highest honor at the festival. And it was directed by a woman, Payal Kapadia. Mm. Last year's Grand Prix winner at Cannes went on then to win Best International Picture at the Oscars.
Got it.
So a lot of people are wondering why that was not the choice. Many are citing sexism as the reason that an all-male committee selected a movie that was directed by a man as opposed to a movie that was directed by a woman.
Can I also ask, is the other film also in Hindi?
It's in multiple Indian languages. Okay. And is about women. It is a women-centered film.
Yeah.
The committee claims that they saw Lapita Ladies as being quote-unquote more Indian, and they called All We Imagine as Light as a European movie set in India, which
interesting
is also setting a lot of people off in frustration because it's reductive. I haven't seen All We Imagine as Light, but it is apparently reductive of the full spectrum of the Indian experience because that is a movie that is set in Mumbai in a more rural setting, but it is filmed in, like I said, multiple Indian languages. According to IMDb, they listed a few different languages that it's shot
in. Well, it would be difficult, I would think. India is so large and encompasses so many different identities and people that it would be hard to pinpoint what is quote-unquote Indian versus what is not without really...
alienating. Absolutely. And I think you could easily make the argument that this is rural. This is a rural northern Indian story. Yeah. And if you wanted to say, like, we wanted to tell a story that was representative of those people, that's hard to argue with. But yeah, to say that it's more Indian. But so, yeah, we don't need to come down on any side of that argument. I just thought it was worth mentioning that that controversy is happening.
It would also be really interesting to watch that film.
I would like to. Yeah. But so I researched a few different little things from the movie, a few different cultural things that I was like, oh, this is helpful to kind of understand a little bit better what's going on in the movie. So first of all, Gungat is the term used to describe a veil or a scarf worn by married women in predominantly the Hindu, Jain, and Sikh communities, especially covering her head and sometimes face. So this is a term for not just the covering itself, but also the term for the practice of covering one's face. And so this term can refer to the way that we see the wedding garb covering the women's faces in this movie, as well as the way that we see the women in Deepak's village more casually wearing just the veil over the top of their face or occasionally covering their face. Mm-hmm. That term can encompass all of those things because those women belong to Hindu communities.
Yeah.
Gungat has been practiced for centuries with multiple references to it in ancient texts in association with the concept of laj, which is a Sanskrit word meaning modesty or honor. Gungat is seen as a means of protecting a woman's modesty and specifically that of a younger woman around older men in her family who are not her blood relatives.
Okay.
During a Hindu marriage ceremony, a bride may wear a veil given to her by her parents, and later in the ceremony, her mother-in-law then covers her face with the gungat. So this then symbolizes her moving from one household to another. And I think we see this in Pool's wedding garb. She has kind of, she's got one scarf that she's wearing, and then she has the, like, more, like, the golden red veil that she's wearing over top of that.
Yeah.
Some households practice a post-wedding ceremony called mu dikai, in which a bride is formally introduced to the groom's relatives. When she arrives at their home, they each lift her veil and give her a welcome gift, which sounds very nice.
Yeah, I like gifts.
Yeah, who doesn't? After the ceremony, the bride will then observe full veiling for a few months or until her in-laws advise her to stop wearing her veil. The aristocratic classes were the first in India to begin abandoning the strict public veiling, and it has slowly dribbled out of practice in the lower classes and castes over time as well. In 2004, a survey found that 55% of women still practiced some form of gungat, the majority of them from Hindi-speaking states. Mm. And that was 20 years ago. I imagine it's lessened more so in those 20 years in more places, but that was the last kind of year that I guess they were surveying women.
Okay.
And, you know, to be abundantly clear, as we talk about these traditions and as we talk about the way that it impacts the women in this movie, like, there's absolutely nothing wrong with a woman choosing to cover her face, choosing to practice gungat. It just should be a choice. Yeah. Everything should be a choice.
Yes.
Yeah, so that was one thing I wanted to understand a little bit better, not just from this movie, but also this came up in Luca Chupi, too.
Right, yeah.
And then I also wanted to research, because they mentioned the day that their wedding happened.
Oh, the auspicious day. Yes.
And that's why there were multiple married, newlywed couples on the train.
Right.
And the day is Akshaya Tritiya, which is an auspicious day in Hindu and Jain traditions that falls in the springtime and signifies a day of unending prosperity.
Ooh.
It is considered particularly auspicious for new ventures to begin, including marriage.
Okay.
It's also regionally a day that is significant for women, whether they're married or unmarried, who pray for the well-being of the men in their lives. And also, too, a reminder that, like, we know that a religious tradition is not everyone's tradition. Like,
right.
Not every Hindu celebrates this particular auspicious day. We're not trying to say that that's true for everyone, but clearly it's true for the characters in this movie, and that's what leads us to this conundrum.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and it's helpful to have the added context of what that is.
Yeah. Yeah. So just a couple little things to help us understand the movie a little bit better.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
That's really cool. And I don't know how many movies we get that are, like, really revolving around marriage in this way.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I enjoy having the added context then for, like, weddings in this film. Yeah. And it was great. And I'm really happy that we watched it.
Me too.
And I'm looking forward to it being one that I rewatch.
Absolutely.
And share with some other people, too.
For sure.
I think it's worth the watch.
Absolutely. I think, like I said before, I challenge anyone not to enjoy it.
Yeah. Cool. Bollywood news.
Yeah. I do have a few pieces of Bollywood news.
Okay. Please share. I have nothing.
I have... These are all, like, movie-related things. Movies to come. To keep our attentions on in the near future.
Great.
First of all, Bulbulaya 3 is coming out at the start of November. The trailer came out just...
I was like, this November?
Yes.
That's so soon.
The trailer came out just like a week or two ago, I think, when this episode airs. And in 24 hours, it became the most watched trailer in Hindi film history.
Wow, we're so, like, excited.
Yeah, so like that and then the numbers of people who went to see Stree in theaters, like, clearly the horror comedy genre is working well for this industry.
It's thriving.
Yeah. And I did watch the trailer. I hope that this is a good one. It sort of felt like maybe there was a lot of recycling of
I'm
prior jokes and concepts
okay.
and characters. But hopefully it'll be fun. Hopefully that's just my pessimistic brain interpreting yeah. it that way.
I'm actually trying to remember the plot of the first one. What happened in the... Because the second one was the cool, like, the house with the sisters.
And yeah, the we haven't seen the first one.
Oh, right.
Because the first one's with Akshay Kumar. Well, not that, not because it's with Akshay right. Kumar, but...
Wait, so does the third one not have Kartik?
It does, yeah.
Oh, that's confusing.
Yeah. Okay. I think it's like the character was consistent from the first... Like, I think...
Got it. It was one of those.
Yeah, yeah. It's a little confusing as to why this one's three, but it's fine.
Yeah.
We also got a teaser for the movie Baby John, which is one with Varun. You had that exact reaction the first time I mentioned the title of this movie. It's like a dark action movie, it looks
which
like.
Which is not what I'd expect.
But it's got a really good cast. I didn't realize that Jackie Shroff, Pankaj Tripathi, and Sanya Malhotra are all in it.
Oh.
Yeah, so it looks like it could be really good, and this teaser was very specific to Jackie Shroff's character. Like, I think they might be doing ones for a lot of the big characters. You know how they do
that? That's fun. Yeah. Yes.
So that was cool. Jackie Shroff doing his thing. The last one, and the one I'm most excited about, is Kriti's new movie that's coming out on Netflix on October 25th, very Ooh. Soon. And this is the first movie that she is a producer on. So her production company, I think Blue Butterfly is yes. the name. Yeah.
Is this the one with Kajol?
Yes, it is.
It's finally coming out.
Yeah. And so Kajol, it looks like it's kind of a like a dark crime thriller. Kajol plays a cop. Kriti is in a doubles role. Looks like it could maybe have some like a commentary on violence against women.
Oh, man.
It looks good. I'm hopeful for it. So we'll have the chance to see that very soon, too.
I am so excited about that movie.
Yeah.
I had been thinking, oh, we'll have to pick our lineup for the next little bit.
Our lineup might pick itself.
That would be at the top of my list. Yeah. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. Cool. Pluggables, follow us on Instagram at Two White Girls Talk Bollywood. Do what you do there. We appreciate you, even if, you know, even my you posting schedule is, yeah.
Oh, off. That too, yes.
Also, yeah, if you do nothing, and if we do nothing, we still appreciate you. You can also subscribe to us on whatever podcast platform you listen to us on, and you could also consider leaving a rating or review mm-hmm. on whatever podcast platform you listen to us on. And as always, we appreciate you so much for listening.
We do. And join us as well on YouTube and Spotify, where we keep our Bollywood bangers playlists and add the songs that we love from the movies we watch to those playlists. And we link them in our episode descriptions and in our Instagram posts when we release a new episode. So we will look forward to having you join us there, too.
Yes. I appreciate that you removed the on Tuesday. It's not been on Tuesday lately.
Listen, if I can just entirely cut out us having a TikTok, you can post the Instagram posts whenever it's convenient.
Anyway, next week, we will be watching another spooky film.
Yep. We're very excited that Stree 2 is in fact available for us to stream. And so we will be rounding out October with that. Hopefully, fantastic flick.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it got pretty good reviews, right?
I mean, it's got a 7.2 on IMDb, which is solid.
That's pretty good for yeah. IMDb. Yeah. Oh, man, I'm so excited.
I know, me too. I feel like this movie's been a long time coming, and people have clearly been loving it because it raked in the dough at the box office, and like for yeah. weeks on end. It wasn't like it right. came out and then people stopped going to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's gonna be fun, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Our plot description on IMDb is, after the events of Stree, the town of Chandari is being haunted again. This time, women are mysteriously abducted by a terrifying headless entity. Once again, it's up to Vicky and his friends to save their town and loved ones.
I forgot about the headless aspect because we did watch the trailer and I was like, whoa, what's this?
I know. I had forgotten that too. And then the trailer started playing when I pulled it up on IMDb and there was someone holding a head in their hands, which was very scary.
Yes, that is scary. Oh, and Pankaj Tripathi is back.
He is.
So excited. This is available to watch on Amazon Prime. The synopsis is exactly the same, great. So don't have to read that. Man, I am just really pumped and excited to watch it.
I know, me too. I feel like, I feel like we've been waiting, and now mm-hmm. we get to do it, and it's spooky season, and it's absolutely perfect timing.
Yeah, which is good, because I have yet to actually watch, well, other than the spooky movies we've watched for the podcast, mm-hmm. I have not really watched any other spooky films yet this October, so.
Well, I'm excited for you to get to watch this one and then more, because October is, at the time we're recording this, only halfway over.
That's so true. Yeah. Yeah, there's time. Mm-hmm. So definitely watch Stree 2. Everyone else is, so jump on that bandwagon. And until next time, remember, Bollywood doesn't need us. Mm-mm. But we need Bollywood. Mm-hmm.